Good morning. You're listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Good morning. This is Debbie Verney.
And I'm Jim Riley.
And we're two of the attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm. And we're going to be here for the next hour to answer your questions on estate planning, estate administration, Medicaid planning. And Jim actually does some litigation work, so we can answer some cool questions on that. The phone number here, if you want to call in, is 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. Or toll free at 1-800-WROW-590. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Debbie.
Did you have a nice Christmas?
I did. My son and his family came over for a quick-hitting 2.5 days, and we had to spend the next day in bed just about.
They had to recover from the holidays?
Well, there's a 5.5-year-old and 13.5-year-old, so they were pretty excited and pretty active.
I can imagine that. I can totally imagine that. So we've got seminars coming up in January. One of them is Wednesday, January 16th. And that's at 2 in the afternoon. That's at Glenn Sanders Mansion. We also have one January 15th at 2 in the afternoon at Staybridge Suites on Wolf Road in Albany. That's right across from Macy's. January 17th at 10 in the morning at the Courtyard by Marriott on Washington Ave. And Thursday, January 17th at 2 in the afternoon at the Hampton Inn on Plank Road. And last but not least, we have one in Kingston, which is Thursday, January 31st at 2 in the afternoon. That's at the Courtyard by Marriott at Frank Sotile Boulevard. I finally figured out how to say that. Harry kept correcting me. So I finally figured out. So you're welcome to join us at any of the seminars. The seminars in January are going to be on estate planning and Medicaid planning. So we're going to be going over basic estate planning documents that you need and how to make sure that you protect your assets should one of your loved ones have to go into the nursing home. And you can call us at 518-465-7581 and make a reservation, or you can go online to our website at www.herzoglaw.com. Pretty exciting stuff, huh?
You know, I think it's a great idea because people always have do-good New Year's resolutions, right? I mean, you're going to exercise more, you're going to eat less, you're going to do whatever to improve your life. This is another one of those things in the category that if you've been putting it off and say, oh, and you know, the natural reluctance to confront end-of-life things, and now you can go to a seminar. It's like I always say, dip your toe in the pool. You don't have to make an appointment and go into a lawyer's office. You go, you get some coffee, some cookies, you hear a presentation, and you get to ask questions.
For free.
All for free.
Free is always a good price. So you're welcome to go to any of the seminars. And it's interesting, Jay Marie and I last weekend, we were talking about situations, just basic estate planning. If you have a situation where you have a couple that's not married. So you have a couple that's not married. They may have a couple of kids or not, and then something happens to one of them and they don't have documents. I got into the Saratoga office yesterday and the phone started ringing, and so I answered it, and the gentleman started out by, I live in Maryland, and he started going on to, I need to talk to an attorney. And I'm like, okay, so what's the situation? He said, my brother-in-law is in the ICU at the hospital and in Saratoga. And he has a brother and a sister, and he has a longtime girlfriend. So, and the longtime girlfriend is trying to make medical decisions for him, but she doesn't have any paperwork, right? She has no health care proxy. She has no power of attorney. He said, is there such a thing as an emergency power of attorney? And I said, no, there's not. A person has to be competent to sign a power of attorney, and a power of attorney wouldn't do you any good for health care decisions anyway. And he said, well, what about a healthcare proxy? And I said, well, if she had one of those, then she could make decisions for him. If not, they're going to look to the next of kin. He said, so my wife. And I said, yeah, or her brother. And so he said, well, the girlfriend said that she has a healthcare proxy. And I said, well, they're not going to take her word for it. She's going to have to produce it before she can make decisions.
Always important to have that document around. I mean, a lot of the doctors now want one so that they have it in their files, particularly your primary care. The hospitals want one, even if you're in the emergency room sometimes, and they don't want to hear that you had it. I mean, we've been in the emergency room, not lately, but, and you have one. Oh, yeah, I'm a lawyer. Of course I have one. Where is it? Well, it's at home.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's one of those things. It's a very simple document to do, and we'll talk more about it after we talk to Elizabeth in Guilderland. Good morning, Elizabeth.
Good morning. I have a question about the irrevocable trust, the Medicaid Asset Protection Trust.
Mm-hmm.
If we have a trust and already our house and savings account is in it, but outside of the trust, we have a brokerage account. If we were to put that brokerage account into the trust and then do trading on it as we ordinarily do, what happens if we sell a stock, a security, and we have a profit on it and we want to take the money out? How does that work, or is that permissible? I know we have to take the interest in dividends every year, you know, what they accrue.
Right.
But on a stock sale, how does that work, and can you explain that to me?
Sure. If you have a stock account that's in your trust and you have capital gains and that you want to take them out, what you have to do is what's called a partial revocation. It's a document that's signed by you as the grantor, the one that set up the trust, the trustee, and the beneficiaries. It's basically a piece of paper that says, I hereby revoke $20,000 out of XYZ trust, and everyone signs off. And by doing that, basically, you've kind of taken the piggy bank and you've popped the cork off and shaken some money out and put the cork back in, and whatever's in there is still protected, and whatever you've taken out is not. But you have to do that in order to chip off that piece of the money.
Okay.
And of course, if you transfer the stock account into the irrevocable trust now, that piece of the trust has its own waiting period.
Yeah, it has its own five-year look back. It won't affect anything else that's in there, but the 5 years would start running on it going forward.
Right. And then a second question, a follow-up is, assuming there were a capital gain in that account when the securities were sold, how do you report that? Do you report that on the trust income tax return, or does that, can that flow into the grantor's personal tax return?
Well, you're supposed to pay taxes on any capital gains or losses, but the capital gain and loss stay in the trust. So in other words, if I had stock and I sold it, and I made a gain, and then I bought new stock, that money still stays in the trust. But you're going to do, it's a Form 1041, which is what the trust files. And then that 1041 issues you a K-1, kind of looks like a 1099, and you use the K-1 with your 1040 to report your taxes.
Okay, so the payment of the taxes would still be reflected on the grantor's 1040 tax return.
Right, you're still going to have to claim the losses and the gains. You want to do that because the trust itself pays a lot higher tax rate than you would. So you definitely want to make sure that any of those would pass out to you.
There's no limit on that. In other words, whatever activity is in the trust can go on to the person's tax return.
Yes, because it's a grantor trust. So that way, everything passes through. It passes through to you, and you claim it on your 1040.
Okay. And these forms, these partial revocation forms, do you have to go to the attorney for them, or can the brokerage house, I mean, how does...
Generally, I tell my clients, I mean, I don't know if we did your trust or someone else did your trust. Generally, I tell my clients the first time you do the partial revocation, let me do it so that it's done correctly. And it's a very simple document. A lot of people can cut and paste after and just do it themselves and just keep copies of it. It's not something you have to come back to me every time to do. Some people do, but you don't have to come back to us every time. Once you get it done correctly the first time, you can kind of cut and paste it and do it yourself. The thing you need to do is just make sure that you keep a copy of it. A lot of people will just send us copies of ones that they've done so that we have it in their file, because if something happened and say you did have to go into a nursing home within 5 years, what they're going to do is when they look back the 5 years, they'll say, oh, well, where did this $20,000 come from? And you're like, well, it came out of the trust. And they're like, aha, you broke the trust. But if you have the partial revocation that shows that everyone signed off, then you didn't break the trust.
Okay, thank you. That was very helpful.
You're welcome. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
And if you want to be our next caller at 518-476-5900, that's 518-476-5900, or toll-free at 1-800-WROW-590. So any new exciting cases?
Well, I have one potential one, but it's going to be another one of those cases, as you might say. There's eight siblings from two different marriages, and their father died some years ago, and he was a relatively wealthy man. Everything was settled between them and the then wife. But now, all of a sudden, much as one of the fellows called me years ago, you know, Dad had a lot more money than that.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we've all heard that before, and we don't really pay much attention. So he called again a couple of weeks ago. Well, you know, whatever they did with those Swiss banks, the Swiss bank just sent the administratrix, which was the widow, a letter saying they're $7.5 million.
Oh.
Now, of course, this means that somebody probably didn't check that box on their 1040 about having money in a foreign account. And it's uncertain whether there'll be anything left after Uncle Sam gets its cut. But they now may want to retain me as a group.
Now, he died when?
Oh, years ago. I mean, the settlement, I think, there was a fight about the estate between the children and the widow, and that got settled 6 or 7. We had no part in that. They settled it 6 or 7 years ago.
So would the money in the Swiss account, would that have been included in his estate for estate tax purposes?
One would think so, and I don't think he did them the favor of dying in 2010, but maybe he did.
When there was no estate tax.
There was no tax.
Yeah. What are the odds? Anyway, that's an interesting one. And they didn't know where it was. I mean, they said that there was money out there, but they didn't know where it was.
The one that I talked to years back had what I'll call very specific ideas about it. And they pointed it all out to the administratrix, but what investigation she did, they're unaware of. This kind of came falling out of the change in Swiss banks' practices after UBS was found to have conspired to hide people's income from the United States tax authorities. So now they've become more open, and it's I'm sure it's going to be not an easy thing, but it's a lot of money, so it's worth keeping abreast of.
Yeah, definitely. That's kind of interesting.
And the settlement agreement covers it. In other words, okay, here's what we have, and if anything else gets found, we'll split it, half to the kids, half to the widow.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
But she came clean and told him that there was money out there.
You know, the interesting thing is, and I'm only surmising, the surrogate's court made her apply for what they called renewed letters.
Right.
And I think once an administrator is appointed, they serve forever as to unadministered assets. But the court decided in this case, since there were eight other distributees and there had been a fight that was settled, they made them cite them. I think they signed waivers.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting, because usually you just apply for additional letters and you get them.
Yeah, you give them an out. They say, hey, it's been 5 years. What are you doing here?
Exactly.
And sometimes it's, well, we just found $10,000 in an abandoned account at the controller's office. Oh, okay, fine. They just issue them. But in this case, there's an actual proceeding, which I find odd. But, a good way of dealing with it from the court's point of view to make sure that she didn't hide it.
So that was interesting. So probably when they applied for additional letters, the court looked at the file and said, oh, so we've got an agreement here that if there's any money found in the future, so
yep,
they thought that there was going to be money in the future that everybody has to sign off, so we better make sure that everybody knows there's extra money.
Exactly.
Very cool. Very cool. We'll get exciting cases like that. If you want to be our next caller, the phone number here is 518-476-5900 or 518-476-5900 or toll free at 1-800-WROW-590. I went home for Christmas to Missouri, and it's interesting because my mother once a month goes to lunch with all of her girlfriends from high school.
Wow.
Yeah, and she keeps telling me that there's less and less of them, you know, that are going to this luncheon. And I thought that it was kind of interesting because she was telling me about, you know, who had a husband, who didn't have a husband, you know, who basically ended up, you know, since the last time they saw each other, that obviously everyone's aging. And I'm thinking, well, she's in pretty good shape. Hopefully she'll be around for a while and stay in good shape. But, you know, she's doing very, very well. But it's interesting for her to mention, you know, that each month there's just like less and less of them that are going to go to this luncheon.
Yeah, and some people die off. Others just can't get out as readily.
Well, that's what she said, too. I mean, there's a lot of people that they just can't get out. I mean, the weather in Missouri is a lot more forgiving than it is up here. As a matter of fact, I was, you know, out without a coat and everything when I was there. But it still gets cold, and it still gets... We have ice storms, as opposed to, like, the snow melts right after you get snow there. But they do have a lot of ice storms, and obviously, you don't want to have to get out and that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there was wild weather. I mean, it's football bowl season. So my school, Boston College, they're playing in some bowl game in Dallas, and they were winning, and it started at 1:30 or something. So I'm going home to watch it. I got home, and I looked on the ESPN app. It was delayed for weather. They canceled it because of lightning storms.
Oh, that's interesting.
They waited an hour and a half. And there were more waves coming through, so they felt, okay, no game.
So was it a bowl? It was a bowl game?
Yes, something, the ServPro First Responder Bowl game.
Interesting. I think that Syracuse was in the Camper World Bowl or something like that.
They crushed West Virginia last night. Absolutely crushed them.
Yeah, I missed the game, so.
There
I forgot. I was forgot it was on, and by the time I turned it on, I was like, oops, too late. So, but, again, if you want to be our next caller, 518-476-5900 or toll-free at 1-800-WROW-590. When we were talking earlier, we were talking about estate planning documents that everyone should have. And I always feel that the most important document that a person can have is a power of attorney. Because if you don't have a healthcare proxy, they're going to look to your next of kin to make your healthcare decisions. If you don't have a will... Basically, they're going to notify your next of kin. Somebody's going to step up, and they're going to distribute your assets. But if you don't have a power of attorney and you become incapacitated, then who's going to make your decisions for you?
Well, the state will require you to have a guardian appointed. And a guardian can, the authority can be absolutely broad or it can be very specific depending upon individual circumstances. But usually when that happens... There's a really broad grant of authority given. And because of that, and because presumably years ago some dishonest relatives taking advantage of elderly folk, the state has an elaborate and very expensive procedure before they will put their seal of approval, even if all your family agrees. Let's say you're widowed or widower and you got three kids. And happily enough, they're not fighting. They've all agreed this one should do it because they live in town. Nobody's going to fight about it. It's still going to cost you $8,000-$10,000.
Oh, yeah, uncontested guardianship, definitely. Yeah.
And that's not because we do it that expensively. We do them, I think, maybe cheaper than many people. But the procedures require different court-appointed officials to kind of do a separate investigation, do separate representation of the person who's freedom is being invaded, I guess I'd call it. And guess who pays them? The person whose freedom is being invaded.
I know. That's not fair. But it is. That's the way it is. And a lot of people don't have powers of attorney, and that's what happens. When you have someone that has to have decisions made for them, you have to either get a power of attorney or a guardianship if they're incapacitated. And I've had people that brought mom or dad into the office and wanted me to see if I could do a power of attorney for them. Or I've gone to nursing homes to see if they had, just because you're in a nursing home doesn't mean you don't have capacity to do a power of attorney. A lot of people are totally lucid in a nursing home. It's just that they, for physical reasons, they're in a nursing home. But sometimes when I sit and talk to them, there's just no way. There's just no way I can do a power of attorney for them because they're not capable of understanding what they're signing.
Exactly. So it needs to be done in a timely manner, which it makes me think of. My wife was telling me recently, she's a big Sopranos fan.
Ah.
So she was heartbroken when James Gandolfini died.
Mm-hmm.
But there was recently an article about he had an estate of $71 million.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you have that much money, you don't play around. You go to a good lawyer and you get it planned. And everything in, he had a trust. Everything was laid out. He had a kid by two different marriages, and they were treated equally. And this one was assured of staying in the house or apartment, whatever it was, in Greenwich Village. It was all planned out for a man who died quite unexpectedly in his 50s. So it's not something that's limited to folks in my generation to look to taking care of things. It's everybody, because we don't know what can happen tomorrow. You could get hit by a bus.
Definitely. I mean, that's not something that you plan on, but you could.
Right.
I mean, I was telling Jim and Ben when I came in that we were in Missouri. My sister lives in Wisconsin, and we were driving over to Branson, you know, the country western capital next to Nashville. And my sister was going around a roundabout. The guy decided he was in the wrong lane, cut in front of them, hit wet pavement, spun around to where he ended up face-to-face with them. So they just barely tapped him. They hit the brakes in time, but the lady behind him just smashed the back of their car. So they had to drive back to Wisconsin with a smashed car.
Oh, my goodness.
So these things happen. We have Mark?
Mary.
Mary.
In Albany.
Good morning, Mary.
I was just wondering, maybe you will be able to answer this question. We were talking the other night, a friend of mine, he owns a house, and that's about it, you know, with his pension and Social Security. And if he should take sick, he thinks his house with his will be turned to his children or his one person. And I said, I don't think so. I said, what happens if you have to spend time in a nursing home? Who takes that house? The nursing home? The county? How does that work anymore?
Well, they don't really take your house. Basically what happens, he's a single person.
Yeah.
He has to go into a nursing home. He's allowed to have $15,150, and he can prepay his funeral, and he can have a car of any value. If he had to go into a nursing home and he was at those levels, he could do what's called an intent to return home, and if he did that, he would automatically qualify for Medicaid, but they would lien his house. They would put a lien against his house, so whatever services that they provided for him whenever he passed away, they would take out of the house. So let's just say he was in the nursing home for a year. So he accrued a bill of over $100,000. If he then passed away and whomever was in charge of the will decided to sell the house, the county would get their $100,000 first before any of the beneficiaries would get it.
Yes. Yes. So the county would get that money first. Yes.
Yes. They get their money first.
Yeah. And even if the house isn't worth $100,000, they would get whatever they sold it for?
Exactly. They
okay,
would get their money first. So,
and a nursing home is going for how much now a year?
Well, the average nursing home right now is about $14,000 a month.
$14,000, yeah. When I told them, and I told them way less than that, he looked at me like I was crazy. Okay.
Yeah, see, well, there you were right, and you can go tell him that now.
Wow. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to be sure I was on the right, some of the right information.
You definitely gave him the right information. He didn't want to listen to it, but you gave it to him.
I know. His head was shaking. No, no, no.
You must be a regular listener, Mary, to have been able to.
I do, but I got thinking, you know. And now I want to tell him, you know, he's got to go and take care of this stuff.
He does. He definitely should do some planning. When you're a single person and your biggest asset's your house, you definitely need to figure out how you want to protect it.
Yes. Because just in your will, just saying it's going to go, it doesn't mean it's going to go if you have all this nursing home cost.
Exactly.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I enjoyed the show.
You're welcome. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye-bye now. And now we have Ed from Saratoga Springs. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning. One simple question. I have many, but we'll take this one.
Okay.
I have a power of attorney, or I've signed the power of attorney over to one of my sons,
mm-hmm.
with another son as an alternate.
There's
a little distrust at the moment that I've got to think about. And to revoke the one son, he has to be notified. Is that correct? I mean, is there a formal procedure to tell a person you're no longer the person?
Well, what we'd have to do is we do have to do a revocation of the power of attorney, and then you would definitely want to send them notice. Does he have a copy of the power of attorney?
I don't believe he does.
Yeah, because if he doesn't have...
I think you do, but...
I think we have the originals.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So,
I don't think he's got a copy.
So probably not, but we do a revocation of power of attorney, and then if you've put your power of attorney on file, say you've put it at the bank or something like that, you would have to give them a copy of the revocation so that they would know that he's not power of attorney.
No, all the banks and all that stuff are in beneficiary status.
Right, but do you have the power of attorney on file at any of the banks?
No.
Okay, then probably we would just do a revocation, do a new one, and then just send him notice that the power of attorney had been changed.
Okay, thanks very much.
You're welcome, Ed.
I'll be at your next one of your seminars.
I bet on that.
Bye.
I'll see you then. Okay, bye-bye. Ed's one of our clients. He's a Saratoga client.
Ah.
So yeah, he... it's funny because I recognized his voice when I saw his name. I knew who it was. So he does come to the seminars and ask questions.
Well, it's a fun time out.
It is. You know, where else can you get coffee, cookies, and free legal advice?
Exactly. Especially free legal advice.
Definitely. The free legal advice works out well for a lot of people. Well, a lot of people will sit there and they won't ask questions, but then some people will raise their hands and ask questions, and then that triggers other questions. So I always tell people that I'll be around after the seminar to answer questions if they have something that's really personal that they don't want to discuss in front of, you know, 20, 30 other people.
And sometimes you just have to be there and somebody will ask your question.
Exactly.
If you're shy, like me.
Shy like you? Yeah, okay. And the same thing happens on the radio show, too. A lot of people are shy and they don't want to call in, so they just, like, listen from home, and they're like, oh, well, that makes sense. So Mary's question was a great question.
But that being said, this whole area, as in any areas of law, can be very complex. And hearing an answer to a 30-second statement of facts and then applying it to your own life is very risky. And here's what else is free in addition to the seminar. You can call 518-465-7581 and make an appointment with any of the estate planning attorneys. They'll sit down and talk with you with 30 or 40 minutes, get more complete information, make a suggestion or recommendation as to what they think you should do in with your estate, and give you a price, and then you can sign up or not. It's up to you. So this is a way to get much closer. It's very dangerous to listen to something and then make your own decision because it can lead you astray. As much as we try to get things perfect, it's just not possible in this type of thing. And it's not legal advice. It's a show giving information.
Kind of like when you Google a symptom.
Yes.
It's like you woke up in the morning and your foot hurt. Let's see, foot hurts. And you Google it. It's like, oh, let's see. Then you go to this symptom and that symptom, and before you know it, you know, it's like you have gangrene and you're going to have your leg amputated. So you got to be careful about what you self-diagnose, and you should be careful about drafting your own documents. And so we'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, and Flatbush Road in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131. Or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And good morning. We're back for the second half hour of our show. I'm Debbie Verney.
I'm Jim Riley.
And we're two of the attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm. We're going to be here for the next half hour to answer your questions on estate planning, estate administration, Medicaid planning, some litigation questions. And you can be our first caller this half hour at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900 or toll free 1-800-WROW-590.
Indeed.
Indeed. So, again, we have seminars coming up, not next week, The first one's on the 15th of January at 2 in the afternoon at the Staybridge Spreets on Wolf Road. That's the one where you can see it from the Macy's parking lot for the men's department. Not that I hang out there, but anyway. Wednesday, January 16th at 2 in the afternoon at Glenn Sanders Mansion, Glen Avenue in Scotia. January 17th at 10 in the morning at the Courtyard by Marriott on Washington Ave in Albany. Thursday, January 17th at 2 in the afternoon at the Hampton Inn on Plank Road in Clifton Park. That'll be the one that Ed probably comes to. And Ed called the first half hour. Anyway, and Thursday, January 31st at 2 in the afternoon at the Courtyard by Marriott on Frank Sotile Boulevard in Kingston. So a great opportunity to come in and get some free legal advice, which is what we were talking about before. But you definitely need to make sure that it's specific to your situation.
Correct. And actually to understand, we're not giving legal advice over the radio. It's not proper. We're giving information that will lead people to make a more appropriate inquiry. It's not anything. It's correct. It's accurate. It's as thorough as we can make it in this radio show format. But you really need to get to a lawyer with your situation. Or, in Mary's case, the gentleman who had a misunderstanding of what would happen based on his situation, there's something he could do if he wants to. He doesn't have to, but he can find out what can be done to make sure that what he thought would happen can happen.
Definitely. He definitely has options. So I'm sure she's going to call him as soon as he's up and tell him, ha-ha, I was right. Okay, we have Linda from Saratoga Springs. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning. I have a question regarding my aunt. She was recently operated on and has to go into a nursing home or rehab facility. And they are asking about expenditures that she may have made in the past, large expenditures in the past 4 or 5 years because of some documentation they're filling out. And she did make a payoff of a student loan for one of my nephews in the amount of around $30,000. Is that something that if she has to have Medicaid that they'll have to pay back? She has no documentation other than a will.
Okay, what happens with that is they can't go back to the nephew and say, you need to give us the $30,000. Whenever a person's going into a nursing home, there's a 5-year look back. So what they do is they look at 5 years of the checking, savings, CDs, IRAs, 401ks. They look at all of those documents for the last 5 years. And they don't care if you've spent your money. They just don't want you giving it away. So if it's within the last 5 years, they're going to see that $30,000 gift, right? Because it was an uncompensated transfer. She basically paid off their student loan. And they're going to say, but for you gave away that $30,000, you could have paid for your nursing home for about 3 months. So therefore, even if you qualify for Medicaid right now, we're going to say that you have to private pay for 3 months before you're going to be able to go on Medicaid. And the problem is if she's down to the levels for Medicaid, which is $15,150, she doesn't have that $30,000 to pay the nursing home. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's the problem. Does she have any assets now?
Does she has a home.
She has a home? Mm-hmm. Does she have any cash at all?
Some, yes.
Okay, because usually what happens is if someone has not done any planning at all, we can usually save about half of their assets. So what we would have to do is look at what type of assets she has, like if she has a house, if she has bank accounts and stuff. We'd have to look at what assets she has. We'd have to figure in that $30,000 transfer that she made and deduct that off the top, but we should be able to save about half of her assets. But you said she just has a will. She doesn't have a power of attorney or anything like that?
Right. I'm not positive about the power of attorney. It was written a long time ago, from my understanding. So we're checking on that now.
Yeah, because the power of attorney would be, depending on the power of attorney, which if it's really, really old, it may be difficult for the person to transfer assets because a lot of the older powers of attorney had a limitation of a $10,000 for transfers. So we'd have to look at that, too. But, I mean, all is not lost. Usually we can, like I said, usually we can try and save about half of the assets. But if she'd planned ahead and had the the house like in a trust, and she had some of the cash in the trust. We could have backed some of that out to help to pay for that 3 months, you know, that she's going to have to private pay because of the gift that she made.
Now, I always hear you say, do not let the nursing home fill out the Medicaid application.
Exactly. Because, I'm sorry, go ahead. Yeah,
no, would you please go ahead? I'm sorry.
Well, what I was going to say is whenever you have the nursing home or the hospital fill out the application, if you haven't made any gifts in the last 5 years and all you've got is $15,150, then you should definitely let them do it. But whenever you have a situation where you've made gifts or you have assets that exceed the $15,000, you really should have someone else do it. You should have a professional do it, because for the nursing home and the hospital, they're not looking at transfers. They basically say, give us 5 years worth of records. We're going to file the application and you're going to be automatically denied. And you can't unring the bell. Once you're denied, you're denied. So then you have to go back to square one to figure out how you're going to pay for the care through the penalty period. Whereas if we did the Medicaid application and we looked at the assets versus the liabilities versus what she gave away, we might be able to private pay through the penalty period and get her on Medicaid and save about half the assets.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate all of your information.
You're welcome. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. And so that's something that we do all the time. We meet with people and we go over their assets. When a person's in the nursing, well, when they're in the hospital, generally they have them fill out what's called a generic nursing home application. And on it, it asks you what the assets are and have you made any gifts in the last 5 years, which obviously she has.
Yeah, and I think, of course, the problem there is the hospital has people who know how to do it. They also have a situation where if you're not qualified to be in that bed anymore, they want to get you out of there.
Exactly.
You know? And it's a economic survival on the hospital's part, so they're looking out for themselves as they should. You need to look out for yourself too. The other thing that struck me about that, I think Linda said, well, the will is very old. This, of course, is a reason to do your five-year update or 15-year update, whatever it is. Some people are still probating wills done in the 1980s, although that can become difficult because the witnesses aren't around. But it's really good to come in, because if they came into our office, for example, the point that you made, oh, this power of attorney is not as flexible as to planning as a new one was. And, of course, the power of attorney is a very simple, well, not as simple as it used to be, but it's a relatively simple document. You have to sign here, sign there, initial here, etc., just like Radar O'Reilly. But, you know, it's so important to make sure that those things meet current standards so that whatever can be done on your behalf is able to be done with the documents that you have.
Yeah, and that's the problem with the older powers of attorney. The power of attorney changed in 2009, and then they redid it again in 2010. But the power of attorney now with the statutory gifts rider is about 13 pages long. And the reason New York changed the forms is, number one, they wanted to make sure that the people that were signing up as power of attorney knew what their liabilities were. Before 2009, the person that you appointed as power of attorney did not have to sign the power of attorney. But now they have to. So whenever they sign the power of attorney, there's a page before their signature page that says, you know, you're supposed to keep your money separate from the person you're power of attorney from. You're supposed to act in their best interest. And it's very specific as to what your responsibilities are. So if you breach those, I always joke with my clients and say, they're supposed to act at your direction or in your best interest. If they abscond with your money, we can have them arrested.
Exactly. And it's, that is a really good part of it, that the attorney in fact, as they sometimes call them, signs something after having read, this is an important duty you're undertaking.
Right.
You have a duty to the other people, because otherwise, and this is true of executors, et cetera, especially if they don't find out during lifetime, oh, I'm in charge.
Ugh.
Well, no, you are now the servant of all the beneficiaries. Yes, you have the authority, but you are not in charge. You're burdened. And it's something that we all should do in the appropriate circumstances for family members and the like. But it's not a reward. It's a tremendous responsibility.
I know. It's like people are like, well, I'm going to name this one executor, this one power of attorney, and this one healthcare proxy so that we can spread the jobs around. And, you know, then I'm like, well, that's fine. But, you know, can the one you appointed as executor and power of attorney balance a checkbook? You know, are they good with money? Well, yeah, not so much. Well, that's probably not the person you want to appoint, because you want to appoint somebody that is fiduciarily responsible, someone that actually knows how to take care of your money and do what's right. And as far as your healthcare proxy, you don't necessarily appoint them based on pecking order. This is the oldest to the youngest. You need to make sure it's somebody that's going to follow your direction. And if something happens and you're not coming back, you don't want to be on a feeding tube. Someone that will say no, they don't want to be on a feeding tube. Not someone that's going to be like, oh, well, that's fine. Just do whatever.
Right, right. So we have time for at least a couple more calls. Call 518-476-5900 or toll free 1-800-WROW-590.
590, yeah. And if you want to sign up for one of the seminars, you can go online at www.herzoglaw.com, or you can give our office a call on Monday. We're there half a day on Monday for New Year's. So the phone number there is 518-465-7581. And Stacy will be back, so you can go to extension 126.
But not until Wednesday.
That's right, not until Wednesday.
She's popped into the office a couple of times, bringing us cheer and cookies and all sorts of things, but she's not back full-time until Wednesday with a whole new shoulder.
A whole new shoulder, yes. Yeah, so she'll be back on Wednesday. So if you're going to call on Monday, you can just go to reception, and you can leave a note for a reservation there. And Raquel can put you on the list for the seminars. Or if you want to make an appointment, Raquel can also set up an appointment for a free review of documents if you've already got them. Or basically just to sit down and go over what we think you should do as far as your estate plan goes. We have you fill out, it's called a client questionnaire. And it's a questionnaire that basically says, you know, who are you? Who are your kids or your family? And it's interesting because people come in with their questionnaires all filled out, and as I go through, I'll be like, okay, so you have life insurance. Well, yeah. So who are your beneficiaries? Well, each other. Say it's a husband and wife. Well, who are your contingent beneficiaries? And then they both look at each other and go, oh, well, I think we got this before we had the kids, so I don't really know if there is anyone. Is it the estate? And I'm like, well, if it is, you need to change it.
Right. Or worse yet, it's mom.
Yeah, you know, not a good choice.
My husband, oh, well, okay, mom. You know, I mean, that's a fairly common designation for young married people, and you just need to make sure you change it.
Well, the problem, too, is we've had situations where the children have passed away. They had mom as the beneficiary on their life insurance, and mom's in a nursing home on Medicaid. So mom all of a sudden gets $100,000. That kicks her off Medicaid, right? So they have to spend down the money that she got from her child from the life insurance before we can put her back on Medicaid. I mean, usually we can save about half of it. Again, we can save about half the assets, but you've got to think about those things. You know, when you're leaving money to another person, you know, an older person, your parents or whatever, you need to think about the fact that by the time you pass away or if something happened to you, what kind of shape are they going to be in?
And that, actually, that applies across the board, and that's why the questionnaire is so important. It's not just old people. You could have a young person, either a minor or even in their 20s, who are on some kind of public assistance because of some physical or mental disability, and the receipt of that money will have the same effect. It will kick them off it. And it can be avoided with the supplemental needs trust that also then allows that money to go to the benefit of that person.
Yeah, I have a situation now where the husband and the wife, they both had special needs trusts, but they owned their house jointly. It wasn't in either one of their trusts. And he's in the nursing home. He's been in the nursing home since June, and she just passed away. And I said to the executor, which happens to be her sister, I said, why, you know, how did this happen? And he was on Medicaid before he went into the nursing home, not chronic care Medicaid to pay for the nursing home. But they just kind of like rolled it over. So they never transferred the house out of his name, right? So now she's deceased. The house is individually in his name because she's gone. And the house is worth less than what they owe the nursing home right now. So I told the sister, I said, you've got some choices. You need to figure out what you're going to do. Are you going to go through the expense and the time of taking care of the house and selling the house and doing all that stuff and having to be appointed as executor? Or you just kind of let things go? You know, you have to figure out, is it worth your time and money to do it?
Exactly. Because even in that situation, she doesn't just, the fact that you are named as an executor does not compel you to petition for the probate of the will. And in the absence of it, and in this case with County DSS having an interest in it, each county has what is called the public administrator. Usually somebody in the controller's office or the county legal office who will take over those things. And frankly, being an executor, especially getting rid of a house, et cetera, can be time-consuming and burdensome. And if it's not going to benefit you, why do it? The only thing you have to do is figure out a way to get whatever either valuable or keepsake-type belongings out of it.
Right. And the thing, when you were talking about the Supplemental Needs Trust, her sister's Supplemental Needs Trust was set up underneath the mother's will. So when mom passed away, half the money went to the sister and half the money went to the other sister's Supplemental Needs Trust. So now that the one that passed away, her Supplemental Needs Trust terminates and pays out to her sister. And that's money that doesn't have to go back to DSS. So the mother planned it perfectly. So she passed away. The trust was formed. The trust is paid for. It used to pay for the mortgage. It used to pay for the other sister's expenses, all that kind of stuff. And now that she's passed away, the trust terminates and goes out to the other sister.
Isn't it nice when something works out just like it's supposed to?
Yeah, I mean, it was nice that that worked out. But then they have the problem on the other end. And like she said, you know, he has a brother that hasn't been involved, really. She goes, and I'm not going to do anything until I talk to him, because he should really be making the decisions for his brother, not me. Just because he's my brother-in-law, you know, I shouldn't be making the decisions for him.
True.
Because she's not named in anything. I think, actually, he did have a will that he came in and did, and she is the executor, but like I said, she's not anything else. She's not power of attorney or healthcare proxy or anything. So now she's going to have to contact his brother to come in and take care of him. So at least they planned, but things didn't necessarily work out the way they were supposed to. So we have room. We have time for at least one more caller at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900 or 1-800-WROW-590 toll free.
And think of it this way, you can be the final caller of 2018.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
If you act quickly. This is the last show this year.
I didn't even think about that. You're right. It'll be a whole new year. Whole new show. So I'm on next weekend, too.
I am not.
So I get to do the last show, and I get to do the first show. How about that?
Yes. just like all the cartoons with Father Time creeping out and the baby New Year coming in.
That's it. So that'll be fun. It's weird how it ended up on a Monday this year. You know, New Year's Eve on a Monday and then New Year's Day on a Tuesday. I mean, it obviously does that a lot, but it just seems weird this year.
It does.
The holidays kind of fell weird. They kind of snuck up on us. It was one of those years. And we have Jerry from Albany. Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning. Question that I have is, a woman dies. This was a situation that actually happened in our family. Woman dies, leave, has a simple will, no trust, no anything like that, and leaves her estate to her four nieces and nephews.
Okay.
Names, just names them.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of them had predeceased her.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the law in New York State in terms of any of the heirs of that predeceased person?
It depends on what the language in the will was, because a lot of people, sometimes, let's just say, if it names the four, it would say, and to their issue, or it could say to the survivor thereof. In other words, each of them gets a quarter, and if they predecease, their quarter goes down to their descendants. Or it could say, or the survivor thereof, meaning that quarter would be redistributed between the other three. So it's strictly based on the language of the document.
I see. And I don't believe that language was in there. So and basically, I guess there was some wrangling with the court and whatever, and, about that. So are they... I guess, are they entitled to that even if they don't, if they're not named as the issue or the heir?
Again, it just depends. So did the court have them notify the children of the deceased niece and nephew?
I guess they did. Or it seemed like it came through the lawyer's office that they were doing that. So
because if they were, when the court looks at the will... If they were to inherit, right, they would have to, they'd have to sign a waiver. If they were like at that level, because they have to hit a level. If it said, and the survivor thereof, then it would be the three people.
Yes, and I guess the question is, if there is no language, if it neither says to niece A, B, C, and D, or their issue, or to the survivor, it could say nothing. It's
right.
Just name the four people. Now, I don't have perfect recall on this, but I do know this. If you named your four children and one of them died, then it's kind of automatic because it's in the line of succession. I think when you get outside of your direct line, it is not passed down to survivors. But I don't know what, I'm not sure exactly where outside of the direct line is. I know that at a certain point, if it's not in the language, then they're not going to take. Then the question becomes one of intent. If it says nothing, should this now pass to the other three who were named? And that depends on language, too. Or is that woman now intestate or without a will as to that one quarter? So now it passes in the manner that the law provides that it passes.
I see. Okay. Well, that's helpful. I mean, at least to kind of know there's some provisions, you know, with that, so... Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay.
You know, that's a tough question, but and this is going to sound like a really lame answer, but if you go on Google, and you could probably Google that to find out where the line stops. It's under the EPTL, estates, and I want to say EPTL. Everybody's like, what's an EPTL?
Estates, powers, and trust law.
There you go. And that's what it is in New York. I was like, the little green book that's on my shelf. But you could probably Google it and get some information. Or if it's a situation where you're one of the beneficiaries or you think you should be one of the beneficiaries, we also do estate administration. So that's something where you could come in with the will and we could tell you what the language in the will says and how it would go.
Right. And that is, that's typically... you spend half an hour, the lawyer will look at the documents, talk to you for a while, and then tell you what your chances are, which could be zero, could be good, could be, who knows. And then you can retain or not retain in that situation. And that particular one, I have this just fleeting memory. Does it go out to your siblings' kids, which would be the nieces and nephews? I honestly don't remember.
If it doesn't say issue.
If it doesn't provide to X or her issue, and of course if it provides the other way or to the survivor, and that's usually a question that should be addressed. In other words, it shouldn't be silent.
When I do documents, I will go through and I will say, okay, you want to leave it to your niece, Sally. Okay, if Sally dies before you do, want it to go to her kids. Yes. Then I put issue.
Yeah.
George, Do you want it to go to his kids? Well, he doesn't have any kids. Okay, so we want it to pop back to the other beneficiaries. You know, what about this? What about that? And whenever we have situations like that, we'll specifically go through each one of them and figure out what we need to do. Because yeah. They may or may not have kids, and sometimes they don't like their kids.
Well, and it's possible that woman, she left it to nieces and nephews. Maybe her kids were no good to her.
Well, and her kids could go in and contest the wills because they would be intestate distributees.
They can. And so that, here's another very interesting old case. A woman who had, I'm going to say, three kids and a number of grandchildren and one great-grandchild didn't like any of them. She wanted to leave all her estate to charity, which you can't do if you're survived by issue. The lawyer that she went to knew this, and she said, well, I don't want any of them to get anything. What do I do? You don't have to leave them anything. You just can't leave it all to charity. He says, well, you have a good friend? You want anything? Along comes the two-year-old. Never did anything to offend this woman, obviously. She got half the estate. The charity's got the other half.
There you go. But obviously, the two-year-old got it in trust. We wouldn't want to give it to her outright.
Correct.
Two-year-olds generally aren't very good with money. None that I've met anyway, but, you know.
Well, at least they're not going to go blow it, like buying a Ferrari or something at 18.
As long as it's in trust.
Yeah.
So have a great weekend. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
And we'll talk to you next year.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.